Okay, we're going to start here on the top of Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Kushrim Dli Bepiskia Velo Bechevil. One can tie a bucket. The bucket here we're speaking about is a bucket used to draw water. So they would usually tie a rope to this bucket in order to draw the water from the well, from the cistern. So you're allowed to do that with a piskia, which is a belt of sorts, of a low bechevel, but not with a rope. Fear being that if you tie it with a rope, you're going to leave it there, because that is the natural place for the rope to be, and if you tie it on, you're not going to remove it afterwards. On the other hand, if you use an item of clothing, you use something that has other utility, or that you'd be apt to take off, then we're less worried, because then you're only putting it on temporarily, and you're going to take it off. Rabbi Yehuda Matir. Rabbi Yehuda says it's totally fine. Klal Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Any kesher that is not permanent, you are not chayav for. The question of what Rabbi Yehuda is addressing here and how that relates to the Mishnah, the Gemara will discuss in 1 second. Chevel demai. Which rope are we talking about here? Ilema chevel da'alma. If we're talking about a normal rope, Rabbi Yehuda matir. Rabbi Yehuda would say it's mutar in order to tie a regular rope to a bucket on Shabbat. Kesho shel kayamahu. That's a permanent knot. Nobody's going to allow that, including Rabbi Yehuda. We know that his statement at the end of Mishnah restricts that. Ela chevel de'gardi. Talking about a rope of the weaver, thread of the weaver. Something that is more expensive than regular rope. Something that will be utilized by the weaver for something else, and therefore he's apt again to remove it and not leave it there. The memra, the rabbanon savri gazrinan chevel de gardi atu chevel de alma. From that, it sounds like the rabbanan are gozer by a weaver's rope atu because of regular rope. They agree that the weaver's rope is not in itself or inherently problematic. They just say it's going to get mixed up with regular rope. If we allow people to put on the rope of the weaver, they're going to think that they can also put on regular rope. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, lo gazrinan. And Rabbi Yehuda differentiates. It says, you can't put on regular rope, you can put on the rope of the weaver. Viraminu. We have a braita that seems to indicate the opposite, which is, chevel dli shenifsak. You have a rope for the water bucket that has severed, that has ripped. Lo yehe koshro, elo onvo. Don't tie it back together. You should just loop it back together. If you tie it in the middle, again, you're dealing with rope here, you're dealing with the water bucket. If you're going to tie the two pieces of the rope back together, it's going to be a permanent knot. You're going to leave it there. So rather, what you should do is make it into a loop, which will undo itself. It's not a knot, like a bow, and that'll be fine. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, korech alav punda opiskia, can wrap around it a hollow belt or some sort of affixing mechanism. Uvaj lo yenvenu. As long as you don't loop it or make a bow from it. Gemara says, Kasha de Rabbi Yehuda ad Rabbi Yehuda, Kasha de Rabbanan ad Rabbanan. Here it seems to be that Rabbi Yehuda's Shita is against his Shita in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says, don't worry about putting on a weaver's rope onto the bucket, because that's a weaver's rope. And he doesn't worry that you're going to get mixed up with a regular rope. On the other hand, over here, he says, don't loop it, don't make it into a bow. The assumption here is because you'll get mixed up with tying a regular knot. If we allow you to put on a bow or loop it, then you're going to go and tie a knot there. So over here, Rabbi Yehuda is worried. Over there, Rabbi Yehuda is not worried. Same thing with the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan and our Mishnah are worried about the rope of the weaver, and they say, don't use it, because you get confused with the regular rope. Over here, they say, go ahead and make the loop, make the bow, and they don't worry about you getting confused with a regular knot. Where it says, Lukashu, that's not a problem. Chevel bechevel michlaf. Ropes get confused. Aniva bikshira lo michlafa. A bow, a loop, will not get mixed up with a knot. When you're talking about ropes, it's hard to differentiate. It's hard to see the difference between the weaver's rope and the regular rope. People are going to just assume if you put on the weaver's rope, you can put on a regular rope. They're not going to be discerning enough to differentiate between them. On the other hand, everybody knows the difference between a bow and a knot. Every time you tie your shoelaces, you know that when there's a bow there, you can undo it. When it's knotted, you can't undo it. It's difficult to undo. People see the clear differentiation between them, and they're not going to confuse them. So that's how we explain the Rabbanan of our Mishnah, who are worried about the ropes getting mixed up. Whereas in the braita that we quoted, they're not worried about the looping, the bow getting mixed up with a knot. The Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda lo kasho. The Rabbi Yehuda's position is also not problematic. Hatam lo mishum de michlafa aniva b'kshira. In the braita, the problem is not that you're going to get mixed up between a bow or a loop and kshira. Ela aniva gufa kshira hi. A bow, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is a knot. It is considered to be tying, according to him. We had a similar question in the position. So we had that similar question within the position of Rabbi Meir in the beginning of the Perek, which is Rabbi Meir who says anything that can be untied with one hand is not considered a kesher or pel kayama. Gemara asks on Rabbi Meir's position, what is Rabbi Meir concerned about? Is he concerned about the ability just to untie it with one hand? Or is he concerned with the ability of how tight the knot is? And the Gemara said the nafkamina would be aniva, would be a bow. You can untie it with one hand, but yet it can fasten in a secure and tight way. And therefore it would be a keshishel kayama, according to him. The Gemara leaves that as a teku. Over here, Rabbi Yehuda seems to have the position that an aniva is something that could be left there for long. Yes, you can untie it. Yes, it can be untied. But it could stay for a long duration, and therefore it's a din of kesher or kesher shel kayama. We do hold that a bow is okay. We hold in general that as long as it's not a double knot. If you don't double knot the bow, then it's considered to be okay. Amar Rabbi Ava, Amar Rabbi Chia, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Mesorat HaShas changes the girsa to Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Yochanan. Our Gemaras have Amar Rabbi Ava, Amar Rabbi Chia, Barashi, Amar Rav. Mevi Adam, Chevel Mitoch Beito, Bikoshroba Para, Obayivus. A person can bring a rope from within their house, tie one end to the cow, and the other end to the trough, basically a leash. Etve Rav Acha Aricha Dehava Rav Acha Bar Papa. So Rav Acha, the long one, who is Rav Acha Bar Papa, asked the Rabbi Ava, Chevel Shebi Ivus, Kosho Bepara. If you have rope that's tied to the trough, you can tie it to the cow. Shebi Para, the rope that's on the cow, Kosho Beivus, you can tie it to the trough. Uvaj Lo Yevi Chevel Mitoch Beito, as long as you don't bring a rope from your house, Vikshor Bepara Ubeivus, you'll tie it to the cow and to the trough. So clear in the second braita that we're quoting, the problem is, we know that when you bring out a rope and you tie one end and then the other end, your intention most likely is to leave one of the two ends in place. If you're putting on a leash for the cow, you have two options. You can leave the rope attached to the cow, and every time you need to tie the cow up, you'll tie it to the trough or the other way around. You can leave the rope tied to the trough, and every time you need to tie the cow up, you'll bring him to the trough and you'll tie him up over there. So in that case, one of the two knots will remain permanent. In the case where one of the sides is already tied, will allow you to tie the other side because the side that's already tied is the permanent side. So the non-permanent side is the one that you're going to put on and off now, so that's fine. What we won't allow you to do is bring out a rope from your house and tie one to the para and one to the ivus, because one of those two you're most likely going to leave there permanently. So that's the braita. The question is now, based on what we heard from either Rav or Rabbi Yochanan before, who says you can bring out the rope from your house and tie it to both sides, which seems to be a stira with this breito. So then Gemara says, he says, no problem, that's not a stira. Hatam chevel d'alma. Over there in the breito, we're done by regular rope. Hacha chevel d'gardi. When we, Rabbi Yochanan or Rav, who brought that memra, they were talking about a weaver's rope, which is similar to what we suggested in our Mishnah now, which is something you're not going to leave there permanently. So even if you tie both sides, we're not worried about permanence of this rope because it's going to be released. Why is it going to be released? Because it has other utility. Nobody's going to leave this rope here. It's worth more somewhere else, and they're going to come and release it. It's going to be released because the person's always going to take it off. It's a temporary solution. Chevel d'gardi is a paradigm for a temporary solution, something that has more value or utility somewhere else, and so we know you're going to release it after time. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Bei Kivai, the utensils of a weaver, Mutar the Tautlan B'Shabbat. One can carry them around on Shabbat. Weaver's Kelim, you would assume, are problematic because of Muksa. Things that are used by the weaver, and they're Muksa, so you shouldn't be able to carry them around. Yet we have a statement here from Yehuda Amar Shmuel that says that the weaver's utensils, you can carry them around on Shabbat. Bei Minei Mirav Yehuda, so they asked the Rav Yehuda, Kovid HaElyon, the Kovid HaTachton Mahu, the upper beam and the lower beam, what is the din? He said to them, in Lav, yes, no, Verafia Biyode. It was weak in his hands, meaning that sometimes he answered yes, sometimes no. It was clear that he didn't have a grasp on this halacha with regards to the Kovid HaElyon and Kovid HaTachton. Kovid HaElyon and Kovid HaTachton, depending on which of the looms that you're speaking about, I earlier had sent out pictures of these looms. The woman's loom, which was a upright loom, the Kovid HaElyon is the top crossbar, and the Kovid HaTachton is the bottom crossbar. Top crossbar has the sheti, the strings of the warp on it, and the bottom bar is where you roll up the ariga. Once you've weaved, you roll it onto it. One is the feeder for the strings of the warp, and the other one is once you've woven the arev, the woof, through it, then you tighten it, and then you roll it up so that you roll the weave onto the lower bar. They're basically holding up the strings of the warp, one on the top, one on the bottom. That's the Kovid HaElyon and Kovid HaTachton. It's a large beam. The same would be true in a foot loom. It's just that one would be at the far end. Kovid HaElyon will be at the far end. The Kovid HaTachton will be in front of the weaver, as he's sitting and pushing the pedals, He'll twist the koved at tachtonet in front of him. That'll pull the weave towards him. And again, the feeding of the sheti will be on the other side, the far end of the foot loom. And that will feed the sheti into the foot loom. It's either, they're called elyon and tachton because of an upright loom. So that's top and bottom. In a foot loom, there'll be elyon and tachton, but really it's the far and the close one. But they're functioning in the same way. There are big pieces of wood, specific pieces of wood. And they would seem to be designated specifically for the usage or utility of the loom. Once you have that, you have something called kli shem lachto liyisur. That's what Rashi terms it over here. The easy way to deal with this is to say not only is it kli shem lachto liyisur, but it's also, right, muksa machmat kisarom kis, which is that the value of the object is so high or so much to the particular usage that you would never use it for an alternative usage. It's designated for that primary purpose. And it would be crime to take it away from there because you would be diminishing the value of the object. It's so expensive over there. We spoke about this in the past, that you need to use a camera to smash a nut. You wouldn't do that because the camera is just worth too much money. You would never pick it up for that reason. The camera is used for its designated purpose and not for alternative purposes. That makes it muksa machmach kisaron kis. Over here, Rashi writes in both cases that it will be kli shemlachto liisur. That kli shemlachto liyisur is mutar the gufo ule mikomo. Rabbi Yehuda agrees that a kli shemlachto liyisur, a kli, a utensil, its primary purpose is for yisur. You're allowed to use it when you utilize it for something that is utilizing the object itself, a hammer, which normally is used for yisur. You're allowed to take the hammer and smash nuts with the hammer. And so that's the classic case of kli shemlachto liyisur that you're allowed to use for tzarach gufo. So over here, it would seem that Rashi claims that it's just kli shemlachto liyisur. Why should that make a difference? In terms of kli shemlachto liyisur, you still should be able to use it for tzarach gufo. The Rabbi Akiva Eiger actually notes this point in Rashi, and he points you to the Tosfot on Kufchav Bet, Amud Bet, and Kufchav Gimel Amud Aleph. Over there, Tosafot says, even within kli shemlachto liyisur, there are differences in terms of primary and tertiary utilization. Tosfot notes, Rishlamar, the lesser of Yudel, Dumia, the Pitsue, Guzim, Shi, Malacha, Grua, the Gabay Kornus, Shi, Miuchad, Malacha, Choshuva. Sometimes when you have an object whose primary utility is so important and so significant that even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that to use it for some malacha grua, as he calls it, from some small type of work, that would still be problematic. Tzarach gufo is only mutar when the tzarach gufo is measured or in some sort of relationship to the primary utilization of the object. It creates, in a sense, this equivalent of what machmat chitzaron kis is, but he doesn't do it because of the monetary value, because of the uniqueness of the object, but rather in its relative utilization. Primary utility is so far away from the secondary or tertiary utilization that we're going to say don't do it, because that's not called tzarach gufo anymore. Tzarach gufo has to have some balance between what you're going to use it now for versus what you normally use it for. So that's maybe what Rashi's referring to over here, the kovid elyon, kovid etachton. What are you possibly going to use this for that would have, in relationship to using it on the loom, that would have any consideration or any balance between them? And that's probably what Rashi's referring to over here. So it's a type, I would call it a muksa machmat chesaron kis. Even though we're talking about chesaron kis, we're just talking about relative utilization. Itmar, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmo, Klei Kivai, Mutar L'Taltulam B'Shapat, you're allowed to carry them on Shabbat, and not Buksa, Afilu, Kovid Elyon, V'Kovid Atachton, even the upper beam and the lower beam, Avalo Et Amudim, what you can't carry are the Amudim. Now the Amudim, this is talking about an upright loom, the woman's loom, and those uprights, they get planted into the ground, they're the uprights, they hold the Kovid Elyon and the Kovid Atachton together, they basically hold the whole loom together, they are the frame of the loom, these two uprights, one on each side. So those amudim you can't move. Amalei Rova Rav Nachman. Rova says to Rav Nachman, Maishna amudim dolo. What's the problem with the amudim? If you're allowing them to move the kovid elyon and kovid etachton, how could you not let them move the amudim? Ileima deka avid gumot gumot. If it's because when you remove them from the ground, you're going to leave holes in the ground. They're planted in the ground, so when you remove them, they're going to be holes in the ground that are exposed from where they are planted. Do you think that's the problem? They happen by themselves. It's not like you're making a hole, you just remove it, and now there's a hole there. It's not. We have a Mishnah. Domein lefet utznonot tachat hagefen. Someone who buries turnips and radishes underneath the vines of the vineyard. Im mikzat alav migulim. If a part of the leaves are exposed, Eino Choshesh. You don't worry about Lo mishum kilayim, lo mishum shvi'it, lo mishum ma'aser. You don't have to worry about any of these items because you're not really planting them. If you were planting them, you would have submerged them entirely in the ground. What you're doing is storing them there. That's why you left the leaves exposed. That's why there's no problem for kilayim, there's no problem of shvi'it, and there's no problem of ma'aser. It's not like you're planting them in a vineyard. It's not like you're planting on shvi'it. It's not like you've taken them out and now replanted them, so now you have to take off ma'aser again. V'nitalim b'shabbat, which is what we're focused on over here, you're allowed to pick them up on Shabbat. Why are you allowed to pick them up on Shabbat? Because the leaves are exposed. Since the leaves are exposed, you can grab the leaf and pull the radish up, pull the turnip up. Even though when you pull them out of the ground, you're going to end up moving dirt that's covering them right now. Nevertheless, since you can get a hold of the item without touching the dirt, and when you pull it up, the dirt falls away from it, that is permissible. That's not a problem of mukseh. So we see you're allowed to pull them out of the ground, even though you're going to leave a hole behind. In terms of the leaves sticking out, it's not so important to our Gemara over here, but in other places, Rashi and Tosafot disagree about why the leaves are sticking out, whether it's only because of Shabbat you need the leaves sticking out, or the leaves sticking out has impact in terms of the Kilayim Shvi'it and Maaser. Is it the fact that the leaves are sticking out the way I explained it before? That's why it's considered to be Shamur? Or the first three are not problematic because you're simply storing them there and not planting them there? You need the leaf sticking out only for the Muksa side of it. It's Machloket Rashi and Tosafot in other places. Just explaining it the simplest way that you want to note it, because I explained it one way. I just wanted you to be aware that there is another way to explain it. So Mar says, no, that's okay. In the field, when you pull the items out of storage and there's a hole left behind, you're just going to leave the hole. That's in the field. Here you're in the house. The loom is found in the house. When you pull the uprights out of the ground in the house, you're going to have two holes left in your house. There, it's more likely you're going to come and fill them in or flatten them out. You don't want holes left in the middle of your house. You're going to fill those in. And that's a problem on Shabbat of boneh. Be mishaveh gumot on Shabbat, flatten out the floor. That would be a problem of boneh in the house. Problem of harisha or the tikkun asadeh in the fields. By the fields, we don't assume that you're going to go fill them in on Shabbat because maybe this is a storage area. You know there's a hole there. There's no necessity to fill them in on Shabbat. In the house, you're much more compelled to fill them in because it's your house and you're going to be there. You're going to be present over the Shabbat, and that's the problem. So the problem is not a mukseh problem. It's not a problem that you can't lift up the amudim because the mukseh, the problem is simply because of what's left behind after you pulled them out. So Rabbi Yochanan asked of Rabbi Yehuda, Klei kivai, kigon kovid ha'elyon or kovid ha'tachton, when it comes to the weaver's loom, upper beam and the lower beam, ma'alu taltalan b'shabbat, you carry them on Shabbat, amalei, ein metaltalan, you can't carry them. Matam, says, what's the reason? The fish, ein nitalin, because they're not carried. So what type of answer is that? He says, can you carry them on Shabbat? He says, no. He says, why can't you carry them on Shabbat? Because they're not carried. The Rashi explains here, even on a weekday, people don't carry them around because they're so heavy. Therefore, their designation is specifically for this utility, and people will not use them for something else. Based on that, now we're back to, again, whether you call this Kalisha Melachto Isur, whether you call this Muksa Machmat Chisaron Kis, we're back to a point where the utility is designated for this primary purpose, and people are not going to use it for alternative purposes. Once you have that, on Shabbat it becomes mukseh, and you can't move it around. So here we have a disagreement. We have another position here where Rabbi Yochanan is querying, and the answer is that you may not carry the kovid elyon and tachton, unlike what we saw in the previous memro. Okay, now the next mishnah. Mikaplim etza kelim afilu arba'a v'chamisha pe'amim. You can fold up your clothes even four or five times over Shabbat. The qualification is that you can put them back together if you need them again. If you want to wear them again that day, you can fold them up and then wear them. So in order to preserve them between the times that you're wearing them, you're allowed to fold them up in between. Umetzi'in et mitot milele Shabbat l'Shabbat. You can make the beds on Friday night in order to be prepared for Shabbat itself. Avalomi Shabbat, the Motzei Shabbat. You can't make the beds on Shabbat because that's making them ready for Motzei Shabbat. That's preparing what we kodesh l'chol, preparing on Shabbat for something that is after Shabbat. With regards to the making of the beds here on Shabbat, there is a dispensation if people pass by those beds or the rooms are going to be visible and leaving the beds unkempt would be unpleasant on Shabbat. One can make the beds because that enhances the atmosphere of Shabbat. Even though they won't be utilized again till after Shabbat, nevertheless, since they have value to enhancing the Shabbat, one can make those beds on Shabbat morning, even though they will not be used again until Motzei Shabbat, or if they napped in the afternoon, they can make them after they nap, because if people pass by, or if they see the room, or if someone's in the room, it would be unpleasant to see the beds in that such a manner, that would be mutar on Shabbat.
Shmuel Omer, mekaplim et hakelim, umetzin et hamitot miyom kippurim l'Shabbat.
Shmuel says you can fold your clothes on Yom Kippur, and you can make the beds on Yom Kippur, in order to prepare for Shabbat. So if Yom Kippur falls out on Erev Shabbat, and today we can't have that, it can never fall out on Erev Shabbat today, but if it did fall out on Erev Shabbat, then could prepare from Yom Kippur for Shabbat. The implications of what Rabbi Shmuel is stating, and we'll get to this much more in detail in the Gemara and Beitza, is that Shabbat has a higher kedusha than Yom Kippurim. Because of that, you can prepare on Yom Kippur for Shabbat. V'chelvei Shabbat krevim b'Yom Kippurim. And the chalavim, the fats from the karbanot on Shabbat, can be brought on Yom Kippur. Since again, Shabbat is more chamor, is more kadosh than Yom Kippurim. Fats that are over from Shabbat to Motzei Shabbat, and a Motzei Shabbat is Yom Kippur. Again, today we can't have Yom Kippur fall out on Motzei Shabbat. But if it did fall out on Motzei Shabbat, he says you can take the fats from Shabbat and put them on the Mizbeach on Yom Kippurim. Avalosha Yom Kippurim b'Shabbat. The opposite is not true. Because Yom Kippur is a lower level of Kedusha. Therefore, you can't take the fats from Yom Kippur that fell out on Erev Shabbat and put them onto the Mizbeach on Shabbat. V'kiva Omer, lo shel Shabbat krivim b'Yom Kippurim, v'lo shel Yom Kippurim krivim b'Shabbat. They're independent of each other. One may not prepare for the other. Yom Kippur, everything has to be done on Yom Kippur itself for Yom Kippur. And on Shabbat, everything has to be done on Shabbat for Shabbat. You cannot prepare from one to the other. That's the position of Rabbi Akiva. Amai debay Rabbi Yana. Now we're going to have a massive qualification of what we said in our Mishnah. Mishnah seems to say that you could fold clothing. As Rashi notes over here, that after they've been laundered, they start to soften up. And if you fold them, they maintain their crispness, maintain their look. We know that if you just throw clothing around, they get creases in them. They don't look as good. So if you fold them, they're able to maintain a certain amount of crispness and a certain amount of smoothness. So you're allowed to fold them. So now the Gemara brings a massive qualification of our Mishnah, which is, Lo shanu ela b'dam echad. The first thing is, if you fold, it can only be one person that's folding. If you're using two people to fold, that's more of a, I call it professional fold. That's more folding than we're willing to allow on Shabbat. Aval b'shnei b'nei adam lo. If it's two people, no. U'v'dam echad nami. Even with one person, lo amran ela b'chadashim. We're only talking about new clothing. Aval b'shanim lo. If it's older clothing, no. So with the newer clothing, as Rashi points out, they are able to maintain their shape or their form much better than older clothing. They crease less. And therefore, the folding is not such a significant type of event. On the other hand, when it comes to older clothing, folding of them is much more significant because they crease much faster. And therefore, the folding is, as Rashi says, a bigger tikkun. That's the next qualification. Beyond that, the Gemara says, V'chadashim nami, even with new clothes, l'amar ela b'levanim. Only talking about those that are white. When it's white clothing, you're allowed to fold it, because by white, it has some impact, but not a tremendous impact. Aval b'tzvuim, when talking about colored b'gadim, lo. By colored b'gadim, we also don't allow you to do it, because, again, so Rashi points out, kipulan mitaknan. Folding happens to make them nice and smooth and has a bigger impact than it does on the white clothing. So in order to utilize this heter of folding on Shabbat, the Gemara just qualified it, said it can only be done by one person, it can only be done with new white clothing. So that's your limitation about this folding. As far as the folding that's mentioned here in the Mishnah, it seems to be that this folding is a more of like a pressing type of folding rather than the simple folding. If that's the case, then what we do today when you throw your clothes and you fold them up quickly, that would not qualify for what's said in this Mishnah. Another hand mentions over here that they're talking about simply folding of the clothing, and that presents the problem, which is what we're choshesh for, that we don't fold the clothing on Shabbat, even though it's not as significant as the pressing, possibly, that they were doing over here. So now the Gemara continues, it says, V'lo Amran, Ela Shein Lo Lachlif. That's only if he has no alternative clothing to wear. Aval Yesh Lo Lachlif, Lo. If he has other alternative clothing to wear, we don't let him fold it up to preserve this clothing, because he just can wear something else. Tana, Shel Beit Rabbi Gamliel, Lo Yu Mekaplim, Klei Lavan Shelem. The house of Rabbi Gamliel would not fold up. He's the house of the Nasi. They would not fold up their white clothing. V'yesh Ha'elem Lachlif, because they had alternative clothing. So even though they were white clothing, and they were probably new and they could have folded them on Shabbat. Nevertheless, they didn't because they had alternative clothing. Therefore, there was no necessity to fold them on Shabbat. If he has a chance to change his clothing, he should change his clothing. Doesn't have a chance to change his clothing, he should lower his clothing. It's a very, very interesting halacha.
Salacha is referring to an Erev Shabbat, getting dressed for Shabbat. So the best thing to do, and what the halacha states, is that one should change their weekday clothing into their Shabbat clothing. And that's what Rav Huna says. If you have what to change into for Shabbat, definitely should change into them for Shabbat. On the other hand, if you don't have what to change into, you should lower your clothing. You should make your clothing longer. Look in Rashi, it's very interesting. In Rashi, Yishal Shel Bigadav, Klape Mata, Shiru Arukim. So they should be longer. V'hu Midat Ashirim. That is the way of the rich, of the wealthy. Ayushvim Bebeitam, Ve'inam Tzrichim L'Slek Bigdam in Aretz. The rich walk out with long clothing because they don't have to take them off the ground, Bishvil Melacha, because of the work they're doing. When you're engaged in work, if your clothing's too long, it's going to get caught on what you're working in. It's going to get dirty. The sign of being rich or wealthy was that you had long clothing because you didn't have to worry about work. You don't have to worry about work. You don't have to worry about rolling up your tunic. You don't have to worry about rolling up your sleeves. Along with the long sleeves and the long tunic is the one not doing any work. He's the ashir, the rich person. So because of that, what Rav Huna is suggesting is that even if a person has nothing to change into, he should not wear his clothing the way he would wear it on a weekday. On a weekday, you would normally wear it rolled up or pulled back so that it doesn't get ruined. On Shabbat, you should act like an ashir. You should act like a wealthy person and lower the clothing down. It looks like a certain amount of haughtiness, that he's walking around like a rich person. Is that proper? Mar says, since he doesn't do it on any day, since you're only doing it on Shabbat, it's not an indication of haughtiness. It's clear that he's doing it for the Shabbat. He's doing it to indicate that this day is special, not because he is special. And therefore, it's permitted to do this or act this way. It's interesting. It's very similar to what we say by Pesach. That by Pesach, even the Anish b'Yisrael acts like an Ashir because of the Cherut and the Yitziah b'Mitzrayim. Over here, you have a similar idea by Shabbat, that every person has to act like a quote-unquote wealthy person on Shabbat. That Shabbat has a unique property to it where you cannot conduct yourself like you conduct yourself on a weekday. We have two Tosafot over here that are important. One of them is what Fred mentioned before, which is, he says, Mikaplim Kelim. One cannot, when about the folding of clothing. Over there, Tosafot says, Mikan, Tamanu, Asur, Lekapel, Talitot, Shel Beit HaKnesset. From here you learn that you may not fold up the talit that is found in the shul. Fishayim, Tzarach, Machar. Because why are you folding up the talit? You're not folding up the talit to use it again on Shabbat. Folding up on Shabbat in order to use it after Shabbat. If that's the case, you're preparing from Shabbat to Chol. What Tosafot mentions over here, the Gemara has also mentioned the same thing because of the idea if you have other clothing to use or with the making of the beds, which is that there are two problems in terms of folding the talit. There's a problem of folding the talit in the folding itself, and there's a second problem, which is that the folding of the talit, even if the folding is permissible, you have a secondary problem, which is that you might be preparing for Chol. You might be preparing for a weekday. Now, if you have a unique or designated Shabbat talit, it might be less of an issue, because then when you're folding it, you're still folding it for Shabbat, even though it's next Shabbat. Maybe over there you could be matir. On the other hand, the folding problem still exists, and that is folding it along the creases. Fold along the creases, then you're maintaining the press of the talit, and by doing so, that could be problematic on Shabbat. The Mordechai mentions over here that there are some people who fold just a loose folding on Shabbat or against the creases in order that it should just be put away properly and nicely, but not because they are folding it to press it. Again, the problem of preparing for Chol might be still exist in those situations. You have to be careful in these types of situations about what to do about the talit on Shabbat, about whether you can or cannot fold it. Again, even though we don't have the pressing that they have, in general, because of these Rishonim that seem to mention that any type of folding would be problematic, we're choshish for that and we don't fold in general. And the problem of leaving something which is bibizayon, leaving the talit just strewn or thrown around. So because of that problem, some people fold it loosely or in a way that doesn't create the pressing that we're talking about over here, in order that it should just not be left to be bizayon. Again, if you can put it into your talit bag and it doesn't seem like it's bizayon, and then fold it after Shabbat, that is probably the best way to deal with it. The Ri over here also has a safek as to whether if someone has clothing that they could change into for Shabbat, that clothing is not as nice as the clothing that they're currently wearing. Should a person change in order to have something new for Shabbat or different for Shabbat? Or should they remain in the clothing that is nicer? And the Ri leaves that as a safek. Right now, the Gemara brings the pasuk that is found towards the end of Yishayahu, pasuk that many people say before Kiddush on Yom HaShabbat. That is, it says, "V'chibato masot derachecha." That is Yom HaShabbat. You should be chibato. You should honor it masot derachecha from your normal ways. V'chibato. What do we learn from the word chibato? Shlei lo yehi mabushkash Shabbat kumolish kashochol. That what you wear on Shabbat should be different than what you wear on a weekday. You should have special clothing for Shabbat. Should look different on Shabbat. People should know it's Shabbat because of what you are wearing. That's a problem with changing on Shabbat after one has left shul, after one's had the meal on Shabbat, into sports clothing, into shorts, to other types of wear that is not unique to Shabbat or special for Shabbat. Problem is that here, the Gemara learns from the Navi that one has to have clothing that identifies it as Shabbat for them because they are wearing Shabbat clothing. And now this is the honor of Shabbat. Mistake that's made by many, that the kavod of Shabbat is not when other people see you necessarily. Kavod of Shabbat is for the Shabbat itself. A person who wears something special to go to shul and comes home and then changes into the shlaki clothing afterwards, they're not wearing that clothing in the kavod of Shabbat. They're wearing the kavod themselves when they go see other people. So the important thing is that a person's consistent through the Shabbat, that they wear clothing that is Kvod HaShabbat, and clearly identifiable as Malbush HaShabbat. Alright, V'kiyah de Rabbi Yochanan, this is similar to Rabbi Yochanan said, Kari Lamane Mechabdotai. He called his clothing that which honors me. The trappings of the individual give Kavod to the individual. The way the person's dressed presents a certain image of the individual. And therefore, it's important that what clothing that you wear on Shabbat does have impact. It's not just how you feel. It's how you present yourself, and the clothing is a way to present oneself. Masot derachecha. It's again part of these pasuk in Yishayahu that you shouldn't do your way. Shalo yehi chiluchach shel Shabbat ki luchach shel chol. The way you walk on Shabbat should not be the way that you walk on a weekday. Again, the Gemara will discuss this in one second. Mimto chaktzecha. Chafatzecha asurim, you may not deal with your own possessions, your own issues on Shabbat. Tefsei shamayim mutarim, but to deal with issues of heaven, that you can do. As Rashi points out, the Gemara will deal with this later on, tefsei shamayim are things like poskim tzedakah. You can have people commit to give money, either for pidyon shvuim, for certain things that are needed for the tzibur, or mishantchim al tinyukot, toyareis. You can set up shiduchim on Shabbat, even though that might involve some monetary matters. These are things that are done for mitzvah. Things that are done for mitzvah are permitted on Shabbat. Chafatzecha, your own, quote-unquote, business needs. Those needs cannot be discussed on Shabbat. They cannot be dealt with on Shabbat. V'daber davar. She'shelo yeh dibrucha shel Shabbat ki dibrucha shel chol. The way you speak on Shabbat should not be the way that you speak on chol. Rashi points out, what does that mean? Go mekach u'memkar v'cheshbonot. Can't talk about business, counting. You can't talk about the monetary matters on Shabbat. On Shabbat, the way you speak should be different. You shouldn't be thinking about the weekday activities. Not thinking. You shouldn't be speaking about those weekday activities. Tosafot, on the other hand, says that's already captured in the previous statement of Chafatzecha. Can't deal with your Chafatzim on Shabbat, only Chafzei Shemayim. Your Chafatzim are Chafzei of business. So that's already dressed. So what is this? V'diber davar. What is this talking about? When Shlo yeh dibruchash Shabbat k'dibruchash Shochol. Amazing Tosafot. He brings down what Rashi says. He says, V'ein nira the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam rather brings an example from Shimba Yochai, who had an elderly grandmother who used to speak a lot. She was a loquacious woman. And then he turned to her when it was Shabbat. And he said, it's Shabbat. And then she stopped. Mashma, he says from that, she'ein kol kach l'daber b'Shabbat k'mo d'ruchol. Christians should be a little quieter on Shabbat than they are on a weekday. They should speak less. Christians should be more reserved in their speech on Shabbat instead of chol b'shamli aminam b'torah chetiru b'shelet shalom b'Shabbat. In Yerushalmi, it says, there's a number of things listed earlier we saw in the Babli with regards to, are you allowed to visit Cholim on Shabbat? Are you allowed to be Menachem Avelim on Shabbat? And there the Gemara says, according to Beit Hillel, the Koshi Etiru. They didn't want to allow these things on Shabbat because it takes away from the Shabbat to visit the sick and to visit the Avelim or Menachem Avelim. But they were Koshi Etiru. So here the Shami also adds to that, the Koshi Etiru Shelet Shalom. The Koshi Etiru allowed people to greet each other on Shabbat, because the tenor of a person on Shabbat should be quieter and less outgoing or rambunctious. And therefore, Tosfot says here, which is an amazing thing, person has to be quieter, more reserved on Shabbat. Now, the Gemara says, Dibur Asur, Hirur Mutar. The Gemara is Midayek here that you're not allowed to speak about these items, but you are allowed to think about these items. Again, that works better a little bit for Rashi. Rashi says that it's talking about Mekach u'Memkar Cheshbonot. You can't speak about them, you can't articulate that which is going on in your mind, but if it's rolling around in your head, then that is considered to be mutar. Right, so that is, mi'ikar din it's mutar. There are many that are makpid. We know that we have stories in the Gemara that even if they thought about something on Shabbat, they would not perform that avodah, they would not do it after Shabbat because they felt bad about it. They felt that it was wrong that they had thought about, say they needed to move this fence here, they needed to water this field. Even though they thought about it on Shabbat, they would refrain from doing it immediately because they felt it was not the right thing to be thinking about on Shabbat. But again, if someone's crossing through their yard, they notice that they need some watering, and they notice that they need some grass over here. So that's not a sur to see or to notice those things. It's a sur to speak about those things. Right? That has implications, again, the way that we speak to each other on Shabbat. Number one, ask people about pricing of objects on Shabbat is a sur, because that is exactly this problem of engaging in things where, talking about business. Person, technically, a person can speak about what happened in the past. I mean, what they did pay or what happened in the past, as long as it's not have implications for it in terms of the future and what the person's going to pay. So number one. Number two is that when you speak about things on Shabbat, they should not involve things that you may not do on Shabbat. If you ask a person, when are you flying? That's problematic because you're not supposed to speak about those items on Shabbat because those are activities that are asurim on Shabbat. If you just ask a person, when are you going home? And the person's here visiting from America, that's fine. That question does not relate to the malacha. So they can say, I'm going home on Tuesday. That's not a problem because you didn't talk about anything. But if you say, when are you flying home? Right, that could be problematic because then they're speaking specifically about doing something that would be otherwise a surah on Shabbat. So the person has to be careful in their speech on Shabbat, number one, about the content of the speech, but also not speaking about things that relate to after Shabbat. Again, preparing or engaging in discussions that involved post-Shabbat or activities that are post-Shabbat, especially things that are asurim. All right, the Gemara says, Bishlama kulu l'chayim. I understand all of these items that you brought or dashin from the posuk in Yishayo. Ela shelo yeh hiluchach shel Shabbat ki hiluchach shel chol. But that one thing that you said you can't walk on Shabbat like you walk on chol, mahi? What's that? Ki adam rav huna amrav, amri lei amar rabbi abba amar rav huna. So some say that it was rav huna amrav, and others say that it was rav abba in the name of rav huna. Haya melech b'Shabbat. This is walking in Shabbat, but paga ba'amat mayim comes to a water channel. Im yachol aniach et raglo arishonah kodem shetekeh arashniyah. If you can traverse the water channel by extending your foot and having the foot land on the other side before you release it from this side, mutar. Bimav, if not, it's asur. Matkif lo rov v'eichel avit. So what do you want him to do? Lekif. The Gemara says, walk around the water channel. It says, kamafish b'hilucha. Then you're walking extra. You're doing extra tircha on Shabbat. Where it says, Be'afer, let him go through the water. Walk in the water. Instead of skipping over, jumping over the channel, walk through the channel. It says, Zimnin demitvason mane. The possibility that his clothing will become soaked, b'mayo, they'll become soaked with water. V'atili de schito. And then he's going to come and squeeze his clothing out to remove the water from his clothing. Ela baha. Kevin delo efshar shaper dami. If you have no alternative, then you're allowed to jump across the water channel. But if you have the opportunity not to jump across and you can stand your feet, you should do that instead of jumping. But rather, what we're speaking about here with regards to Shabbat is this issue. Is one allowed to take a long stride on Shabbat? Rashi over here defines psia gasa as a stride that is more than one amah. Psia benunit, he says, a normal stride is one amah. Can we discuss this? Certainly, Masechta. People have shitot in the amah between 18 inches and 24 inches, but we narrowed it down that the most likely area is probably between like 18 and a half and 21 in terms of the most likely area of where the amah is. So in terms of a stride, a person shouldn't take a long stride. A person shouldn't be running, taking these long strides. Should have a shortened stride on Shabbat, or a normal stride. You do that even on a weekday? I say that whenever you take these long strides, you're running, you're skipping, that is problematic even on a weekday because it reduces your eyesight by 1/500th every time you do this. And if you want to rectify the diminishment in one's eyesight from this type of walking or running, then it comes back on the kiddush, from making kiddush on Friday night. When you make kiddush on Friday night, Rashi says, "Oshote yaim eshel kiddush b'leilei Shabbatot." One who participates or drinks the wine on Friday night gets this benefit. So here you have a good reason to participate in drinking the wine from Friday night, because it helps one's eyesight, to restore their eyesight from that which is diminished from the Psiya Gasa. Can one eat dirt on Shabbat? Who says you can eat dirt even on a weekday? I say that you can't even eat it on a weekday. Causes problems. It sickens you. It is dangerous for your body to eat the dirt. So people thought maybe they were eating the dirt for some medicinal reason. Shmuel Reyosi says, I think that you can't even eat it on a weekday because it's deleterious for your body. Rabbi Ami, kol ochel ma'afrasho bavel. Anybody eats from the dirt of bavel. Gilu ochel mi basar avutav. It's as if he's eating from the flesh of his forefathers. V'yesho min gilu ochel shkatzim v'remassim. It's as if you're eating these disgusting, creepy, crawly things. Dichtiv. Imach et kol ha'yukum. It says in Parshat Noach, with regards to the Mabul, that it melted, it destroyed everything that was alive. Why is Bavel also known as Shinar? The idea being that they felt that Bavel was in a valley, it was in a low area, a low-lying area, and therefore everything from the Mabul washed to the lowest area. And that's why they believed that that plain was fertile. Why the soil in Bavel was so fertile was because of the Mabul, as well as the fact that the Meitei Mabul were all brought there. So if you're eating from the Afar, you're eating from the people who were buried there, people ended up over there. Why is it called the Mitzula? Called Mitzula, which is like the depths, or a valley of sorts, because that's where all those that died in the Mabul end up rolling to or coming to. It's as if he's eating these creepy called things, where it says, but those things were definitely wiped out, completely dissolved. There's nothing residual, there's nothing left of them. They were completely dissolved in the Mabul. So why should it be a problem in terms of them? Since the dirt or the dust of the earth that you eat is deleterious for your body, the Rabbanim would go there that you shouldn't eat it, and they made it as if you ate these shkatzim u'masim in order to indicate to you that they don't want you to eat it. Ha'u gavra, there was this individual, ta'achal gargishta. He ate a, Rashi says a gargishta is some sort of clod of clay of dirt. V'chal tachle, and then afterwards he ate crest. Gatachle belibe, and the crest then punctured his heart to meat and he died. Rashi says that he ate the dirt, then he ate the crest, and the crest took root in his stomach with the dirt and the crest together, and then it grew, and it punctured his heart to meat, and he died from this. So now the Gemara is going to have a long drasha here with regards to what transpires in Megillat Rut. It says, Barachatz, v'sach v'sam tim lotayich. Naomi is giving instructions to Rut. Tell her, you should wash yourself, you should anoint yourself, and then put your clothing on. I'm Rabbi Elazar, elu begadim shel Shabbat. These are the clothing of Shabbat. Obviously, she's not walking around naked, but she has to say to her, put clothing on. She's saying to her, put on your clothing, it's because she's indicating her to put on something besides what she's wearing now. Rav Elazar says, those were the begadim of Shabbat. Ten l'chacham v'chakei mod. If you give something to a wise person, they will do even better with it. They'll be even wiser. Rav Elazar zu ruta movia u'shmuel aramati. These two people exhibited that type of understanding. Rut, ilu na'ami kamra la v'racha v'sach tzam tzimlutayach. Na'ami tells Rut to do all these items. And then she says, tzimlutayach alayich. Beirat Hagorin, and then go down to the threshing floor. Vilu b'didakti, when she actually executed on it, it says, Bateret Hagorin, she goes down to the threshing floor. V'hadar v'tas kochol eshet zivta chamuta. And then she did everything that her mother-in-law said. Because if she had gotten dressed and done all this before, made herself up and gone down, and then gone down to the threshing floor, she would have gotten dirty on her way there, or on her attempt to enter into the threshing area. Rashi also mentions that if she was dressed up beforehand and going down to the threshing floor on a nighttime, that she would look like a zonah. So instead, what she did was she took the clothing with her, and then she washed herself, cleaned herself up, and put the clothing on there so she would have her clothing be in good shape, and she would present herself in a beautiful way. Or, the way that Rashi learned, she didn't want to look like a zonah, so she did it in a tzanua way, but she only got dressed when she reached the threshing floor. So she did it not exactly like her mother-in-law said, but she understood that it meant to get there and then put on the clothing rather than first clean yourself up and then go with your clothing on. Shmuel, what's the case with Shmuel? De'ilu, Eli kamarle. Eli says to him, there was a number of times, Shmuel here is somebody calling him. So Shmuel keeps getting up and going to Eli and saying, did you call me? And Eli says no. After a couple of times, Eli realizes that what's happening here, that Shmuel's getting a nevuah, and it's not Eli who's calling him. So he says, then go back. Shchav v'ayayin imikra alecha. Says, go back, lay down. And if you hear the voice again, v'amarta, daber Hashem. He says, speak Hashem, ki shomei avdecha. Because your servant is listening. V'ilu b'didekti, when Shmuel himself heard the voice again, he says, v'yavo Hashem v'yitiyatzev. Hashem came again. V'yikra kafam b'fam. He called again like he had done the last couple of times. Shmuel, Shmuel. V'yomer Shmuel. Shmuel responds to him, daber ki shomei avdecha. Speak. Because your servant is hearing, or is listening, v'lo amar, daber Hashem. He doesn't say, speak Hashem. He doesn't use Hashem's name, because he's not sure. Eli told him to use Hashem's name. Shmuel didn't know whether it was Hashem or not, so therefore, in order to protect himself, not use the Shem Hashem in vain, he just says, speak, until engage in the conversation, until he knows that it's Hashem speaking. Continue with Megillat Ruth. V'telech, v'tavo, v'telaket basadeh. She came, she went, and she collected in the field. Amar Rabbi Elazar shalcha uvat, halcha uvat, ad she matzah b'nei adam hamuganim lelechimahem. What it means to go, come and go, wasn't within the field, but rather from field to field. She went from field to field until she found a place where there were people who acted appropriately and people who were of upstanding character, and that's where she began to collect, because she didn't want to be amongst people that were not acting appropriately. Vayomer Boaz Lenaro, Hanitzav Alakutsrim. Boaz says to his young man, who is in charge of all the harvesters, the Minara Zot. Who's this young girl over here? He Darkosha Boaz Lishol Benara. What is Boaz asking about young ladies that are out in his fields? Ella, Amar Labilozar, Davar Chachma, Ra'aba. He saw something unusual about this woman. The other gear says, Davar Halacha. Saw something that she knew. Why? What did she see? Shnei Shibalim Lata. There were two stalks that fell, she would pick them up. Shlosha shibalim, ena lakta. She did not pick them up, which is the din of leket. When more than two fall, then that's not considered to be something that is dropped. That's something that is too much. It's only when two fall, not when three fall. So she knew that halacha. Madida dana davar tzniut, rabbi. He saw her being, acting in a way that indicated her tzniut. Omdot mi'umad, naflot mi'ushav. When she picked those things that were upright, she would stand up and pick them. Things that were on the ground, instead of bending over to pick them up, she used to drop herself straight down in order that her skirt would come down. You've seen this with the women who act in this manner, where it's a new one. Instead of bending over to do something, they lower themselves straight down under their skirt in order to pick the item up. So this was an unusual tzniut that he saw in her. So then he says, V'chol tidbakin im narotai. You should stick around with my young maidens. That's what Boaz says to Ruth. Chidar koshel Boaz l'tabek im nashim. Was it Boaz's way to be hanging out? Or Darkosho Boaz, the Daber, Im Nashim, to speak with women? Or to be hanging around with women? That he says to her, oh, go hang out with my young maidens. Amar Rabbi Elazar, given the Chaza, since he saw about her, Vatishok Orpa Lechamuta, that Orpa kisses her mother-in-law Naomi and goes home, Virut Davkaba. Ruth stuck with her. Amar Shari Lidbukeba. He says, if she stuck with Naomi and she did this act of incredible chesed, that she's the type of woman that you can hang out with, woman that you can engage with, because she's a very special woman. Vayomer la Boaz eita ochel. Boaz says to her at the time that they're eating, go shalom, come here, come, you should participate with the eating. Amar la zaremez ramaz la. He hinted to her, atita machut pe David tzeit mimcha, that the machut, the kingdom of David, will come out of you. You will be the progenitor of the Davidic line. Dichtiv be halom. Over here it uses the word halom. And by David it uses the word halom. Shneamar vayivo amelach David. Vayashav lifnei Hashem, David comes and he sits before Hashem. Vayomer mi anochi, the Shem, umi beiti ki aviani ad olam. And who am I that you have brought me until here? Who is my household? Who am I that you brought me ad ha lom? The play on the word halom says that she, who Boaz spoke to her about halom, produced the Davidic line. Who says to Hashem, who am I that you brought me to this point? It says v'tavalt piteich b'chometz. You should join in here and dip your bread into the vinegar. Malazar mikan shachometz yafel l'shrav. Tells you that chometz, vinegar, is good in a dry time in the summertime. Because that's when they were doing the tzira, that's when they're doing the harvesting. Shmo bar nachmani omar remez ramaz la. He gave her a hint, shatid ben latzeit mimech, that a child will issue from you, shemasav kashim t'chometz, whose actions are as difficult as vinegar. Umanu, who's that? Minashe. One of the kings of Beit Yehuda, who was horrible. The son of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who was a tremendous king of Beit Yehuda. He had a son, Menashe, who went off the derech. Vateshev mitzad ha-kotzrim. He sat next to, adjacent to the kotzrim. Amar Elazar mitzad ha-kotzrim v'lo b'toch ha-kotzrim. She sat adjacent to them, not amongst them. Remez ramaz la sh'atidah machu be'davit sh'titcholik. That was a hint that in the future, that the Malchut Beit David would be divided. She didn't sit with Boaz, she didn't sit with the Kotzrim, she sat on her own to show that Malchut Beit David would split with the Malchut Yisrael. They gave her, they gathered for her the roasted kernels, and she ate. The pasuk continues. The Gemara doesn't quote the remainder of the pasuk, which is Vatochal Vatizba Vatotar. That she ate, she was satisfied, and there was left over. Gemara dashes, Vatochal is Bimei David. Then when they ate, when they were eating, was in the time of David. Tizba, when were they satisfied? Bimei Shlomo. Vatotar, when did they have excess? Bimei Chizkiyah. So they're picking the highlights of the Davidic line of David, Shlomo, and Chizkiyah. Vigidamri, some say, Vatochal, Bimei David, Bimei Shlomo. When did they eat? They ate in the time of David and Shlomo. Vatizba, when did they have satisfaction? That was the time of Chizkiyah. Vatotar, when did they have excess? Bimei Rabbi. Talking about Rabbi, who we know was a Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, part of the Davidic line. Tamamar Ahurirei, the Rabbi, the stable keeper of Rabbi, of Atir Mishvor Malko, was richer than Shvor Malko, who was a Persian king, and his stable keeper was more wealthy than the king of Persia. So that was the type of wealth that we're talking about with the Rabbi. But Midika Tano, in a bright that we have, Vatochal Balamazet, she ate, or you eat in this world, Vatizba, the Mot Mashiach, so you're satisfied in the Mot Mashiach, Dotar, Vatidavo, and be left over for Vatidavo. Not going to get into this, but this is an indication, going to those Rishonim, that there's a difference between Olam Haba and Yemot HaMashiach. Because over here it seems the Gemara separates between the two. Right, so now the Gemara over here quotes a pasuk from Yeshayahu, nothing to do with what we had in the previous Gemaras, which is Takavodo, Yekad, Yekod, Kikodesh. They're quoting it over here because there's a machloket, how to explain the pasuk between Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, and Shmuel Bar Nachman. These are people who appeared in the previous Gemaras discussing about the psukim that we're quoting, different interpretations of those psukim. So since it involves the same individuals discussing a pasuk, the Gemara brought it over here as well. That is, Tachad Kivodo, under his honor, Yekad, Yekod, there will be a pyre or fire, kikodesh, like that of a fire. Now the question is, what does it mean, tachat kvodo? Sam Rabbi Yochanan mit tachat kvodo, velo kvodo mashmash, means instead of his kvod, but not really his kvod. Rabbi Yochanan etamei, Rabbi Yochanan is the shitato, Rabbi Yochanan karar lamanei machbudotai. So again, similar to what we saw from Yochanan at the end of the previous amud, which is that Rabbi Yochanan used to call his clothing machbudotai, that which honors me. Rabbi Elazar omer tachat kvodo is tachat kvodo mamash, means the person themselves. Shmuel bar Nachmani amar tachat kvodo k'srifat ne'aron, like the burning up of ne'aron, malalan srifat nishama v'guf kayam. Over there, the fire entered and killed them instantaneously, but left their bodies intact. Afkan srifat nishama v'guf kayam. Also over here, the death that was going to come from Hashem was going to be that they would be killed, but their bodies would be intact. Rashi explains what the Gemara means. First of all, the Nevuah of Yeshayah is talking about the troops of Sanherib that are laying siege to Yerushalayim, and that Hashem is going to intercede and destroy those troops of the army of Sanherib. So there it says, Takat Vodo Yekad Yikod Yikodesh, with some sort of fire that's going to come and devour the army of Sanherib. And then, as Rashi explains, V'chachi Perusha, Ben Rabbi Yochanan, Ben Rabbi Elazar, whether it's Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, Gufan Nisraf, their bodies were consumed. Ella, Rabbi Yochanan Mashmalei, Tachat kvodo is kmo tachat raglav. What does it mean underneath you? It means under your feet. Lashon tachtit, below. And what's kvodo? Kvono haino bigadav is his clothing. Vachi kamar tachat bigdehem shel chayotav shel Sancheriv. Under the clothing of the army, the soldiers of Sancheriv, yekad yikod. There'll be a fire. Velo bigdehem nisrufu, but their clothing did not get destroyed. Tachat kvodo means underneath the clothing, the fire will consume from underneath and leave their clothing intact. It will eat up their body, consume their body, but leave the clothing intact. Velazar mashmalei tachat lashon chalipin. Tachat doesn't mean under, but rather in place of, to replace. Kmo yishalem tachat ashur. That's used in the Torah to mean to replace. So mishum de Velazar lo kari lamane machbudutai lakach. Korcha kvodo hainu gufo. He doesn't think the word kvod means clothing, so he means his guf, his body. V'hachi gamar, and this is what he means, kvodo mamash, literally the body, which is that the body got burnt up, but again, the clothing is intact. And then, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani is, tachat kvodo, reads the tachat like Rabbi Yochanan, the tachat means literally under, but he reads kvodo like Rabbi Elazar. So he ends up saying that the fire came under their bodies, but left their bodies intact. What's under their bodies? It means inside of their bodies, like the Sreifa of Bnei Aaron. But that fire doesn't consume the body, it consumes the neshama that's inside. According to Rabbi Yochanan Belozer, their bodies were destroyed. Just a question of what meaning of tachat and kvodo is.
According to Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, their bodies were intact and they were burnt up from the inside. And this is when Hashem comes to save Yerushalayim in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and he destroys the troops of Sennacherib. How does he appear? Okay, we'll stop here.